evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 24th, 2019. A high-ranking U.S. official visits South Sudan.
As we fly over South Sudan here, I see such rich resources. You know, we just don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the knowledge, the education, and we need access to capital markets to help these people start to grow a business.
And the British government donates millions of sterling pounds to keep South Sudanese girls in schools.
Increased social and cultural pressure to drop out of school, to enter employment, or to get married. These poor educational outcomes have a negative effect on South Sudan's economy and increase levels of inequality.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN Agency for Food and Agriculture Organization says South Sudan has the potential to produce food in the near future. Kip Tom, who visited South Sudan today, is urging donors to press the signatories to the peace deal to implement it so that farmers can produce food. Winnie Chirino traveled with the U.S. diplomat to Panjshir County and has this report for VOA from Juba.
U.S. Ambassador to FAO, Kim Tom, and David Beasley, the UN World Food Programme's executive director, traveled yesterday to Ganliel, a rebel-held area in southern Leeds State, and Kodolok, a government-controlled area in Fangak State. Tom says South Sudan is blessed with ample natural resources, but the citizens need to be taught how to grow and harvest crops, create jobs and improve education. He says he believes South Sudan can even feed the Horn of Africa if the people focus on agro-farming and agro-business.
As we fly over South Sudan here, I see such rich resources. You know, we just don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the knowledge, the education, and we need access to capital markets to help these people start to grow a business.
Tom is urging the international community to pressure South Sudan's leaders to restore stability across the country so that South Sudanese can help themselves instead of relying on others.
The donors need to put pressure on the governments and the people here to say, stop your fighting now. We need peace. Because if we don't get peace, we're going to continue to just have to feed people forever. And we don't always have money to do that. We would rather put our money into development to create resilience and capacity. Because that is our only true pathway to peace and security.
Tom insisted that those who have committed atrocities during the war must be held accountable. IDP Mary Nyangagai, a widow and mother of five in Ganiel, says she fled her home in Koch County in 2016 when fighting spread to the area. Speaking in her native Nuer language, Nyangagai says the food she receives from WFP is never enough to feed her children, so she figures out ways to provide for her kids.
When the food given to us is finished, we go to the bush and collect wild vegetables like kudra and okra.
Nyangagai says when she cannot find food, she sometimes goes to the market and obtains food for her children on credit from traders. She calls upon donors to provide women with money to start small businesses so they can earn money to feed their families. Raul Roy, a father of three living in Kodolok Payam, says he last received food from WFP in April. He says he often goes to the river to fish to get some food to feed his family. Speaking in his native Nuer language, Roy says he planted sorghum, but it was mostly destroyed by floods.
We are left with too little food. I need them to increase more food, considering the fact that our crops, which are planted here, have been destroyed by flood. We are all hoping for you who are helping us.
Simon Kamelbik, WFP's country director in South Sudan, says food insecurity in many parts of the country is due to the conflict and floods in some areas. He says WFP typically gives each family in need 85 kilograms of food while individuals are given 17 kilograms of food.
People are not completely relying on our food aid. It's supplementary to what they can find themselves. This we saw some agriculture, this fish, the other sources of food, but definitely people are still in need, and we will continue to support them as long as required. But the conflict has very much influenced the livelihoods and the resilience capacity of the people.
Kamel Bik says WFP has resorted to delivering food by road and water because transport by air is extremely expensive and not reliable for the future. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The United Kingdom has donated 68.4 million British pounds to support a 5-year girls' education program in South Sudan. The money will help to keep girls in schools across the country. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Kuyok Abol Kuyok, the Undersecretary in South Sudan General Education Ministry, says education officials will start transferring cash to the benefiting girls next week. Kuyok says 288,000 South Sudanese girls will benefit from the UK cash transfer, enabling them to buy things like stationaries, books and sanitary pads. Abol says each girl will receive 4,100 South Sudanese pounds this year. That compares to 3,000 South Sudanese pounds over the past few years. He says the cash transfer particularly helped older girls.
Girls face increased social and cultural pressure to drop out of school, to enter employment, or to get married. These poor educational outcomes have a negative effect on South Sudan's economy and increase levels of inequality.
Abol is encouraging parents to come to school on the day the cash transfer are disbursed to protect their daughters in case anyone tries to steal the money.
The Honorable Minister of Education, Ustaz Deng Yai, said cases of theft will not be tolerated. We care very much about every incident because every cash transfer taken from a girl is a girl who has missed out on her right.
Speaking in Arabic, 15-year-old Dalia John, a primary aid pupil in Buluk Primary School, says she will use her money to buy sanitary pad and scholastic materials.
Whenever I receive this money, I first give to my mother, and she tells me what to do. She tells me to buy pads, underwear, uniform, exercise books, and school bag. Now, this money helps me in buying those things that my mother can't afford to buy for me.
Speaking in Arabic, Esther Korofo, a mother of two girls who benefits from the program, says the money is a huge help.
This money helps me because I'm a single mother. I am tired and no one helps me.
Speaking in Arabic, primary school teacher Grace Enoka in Buluk says the cash transfer encouraged many girls to attend school regularly.
This project helps girls and encourage them to come to school. Right now, we have seen changes in the percentage of girls in schools. They even have a will for education because there are many organizations supporting.
South Sudan education officials says to maintain accountability, the cooperative bank will pay girls across the country. Girls must have their cash transfer enrollment forms with them on the day of payment. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Bor, where the United Nations Development Program has launched a 2-day job fair in Bor on businesses and mentoring. South Sudan's National Minister for Labor and Human Resources says many young South Sudanese engage in violent activities because they lack job skills. Deng Gai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Labor and Human Resources Minister Jemith Hothmai said at the job fair in Bor that it would be easier to achieve lasting peace in South Sudan if youth were being supported in their efforts to find and keep a decent paying job.
The national government, through the able leadership of His Excellency Sir Fakir Mayadit, is committed to promote and support opportunities that increase employment of youth and all citizens of South Sudan whether in public and private sector.
Hoth says his ministry has enacted laws to help South Sudanese access more job opportunities.
In any NGOs who is working here in South Sudan, 80% job must come from national and 20% international. So we have developed a guideline, and we have a problem with this 80% of nationals. And I'm very happy that the governor, when he mentioned about that.
UNDP representative Kamil Kamaluddin says his agency has a number of job openings for youth if they complete the coaching session at the job fair.
There is a little over 150 jobs that have been declared as of today. Now, how many of those will be filled will depend on what we get and what additional skills alignment support will be required. But your answer is yes. And we're also pleased that a lot of the jobs that are on offer are people who also want to start up on their own. They've seen opportunities brought by peace.
Jonglei State Governor Makir Thiong-Mal challenged the state youth to start their own businesses and create jobs rather than waiting for a job offer.
What is the meaning of higher education? Education, in temporarily words, is a master tool. A master tool opens every door. Even the door of business of charcoal, you can do it as, well, if you have a master degree in business, you can be you can do business in charcoal. It has nothing to do with you need money. What do you? Why are you getting educated after all? It is because you want high salaries. You want to tell us that you are skilled and you can do, you can produce something tangible.
Janet Albada, ambassador from the Netherlands to South Sudan, says building peace in a conflict zone like South Sudan means youth need practical skills to help rebuild the nation.
The Dutch are known of providing practical solutions for complicated situations. And I think that the situation in South Sudan, although yes complicated, offers opportunities to build and provide practical solutions. And we also believe that it's important right now, more than ever, to build peace dividends at a time when a peace agreement has been signed.
23-year-old Mading Jok says he and other young people like him want to learn technical skills in order to be self-reliant.
Most of our youth, they are after politicians because they feel less. They can't make something to sustain their life. So they run after those who have money, say that they are given something to sustain their life. But if we are self-employed, we'll get our money, then you will be after your own business.
Jok is urging government officials to create more job opportunities for young people so that they can support their families and in so doing, help the country economic's development. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan rolls out mobile money. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan have launched the country's first mobile money transfer platform known as M-Gurush. The system allows customers to pay for goods and services across the country. Sheila Pony reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan celebrated a rare advance in technology this month as the world's youngest country launched a nationwide system for mobile money transfers. The new service called M-Gurush, M for mobile and Gurush for money in Arabic, removes the need for a bank account, which most South Sudanese lack.
The real aim and the real success of mobile money is in targeting the low incomes and our rural population. Those are the real people that we want to bring them and include them into the financial systems.
South Sudan's Minister of Information demonstrated the ease of use by purchasing a car with his mobile phone. He says it will take time for rural South Sudanese to trust cashless payments.
You have a very big task to do. You need to sensitize the people of South Sudan, including me. You need to sensitize the people of South Sudan on this M-Gurush, because it is not enough.
Ravaged by years of war and conflict, South Sudan is wrapped by poverty and has one of Africa's lowest rates of mobile phone penetration, just 21%.
One of the biggest challenges is network coverage, because as we all know, after the war, a lot of telecom infrastructure was destroyed. Okay, so especially most of the telecom infrastructure in the villages.
But one of the South Sudanese companies behind M-Gurush, Zain Telecommunication, is confident that mobile money is just the beginning of a new era.
We know that the fiber is at the corner. It's just almost to this town, to Juba, where this country will be connected through fiber.
Mobile money is expected to speed up trade and add thousands of new jobs to South Sudan's struggling economy. It also puts South Sudan in the ranks of other East African nations using mobile money, such as Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Uganda. Sheila Poni for VOA News, Juba.
We now turn to Cameroon, where many families are inquiring about the whereabouts of their loved ones after a riot was reported in two of the country's main prisons. Inmates at a prison in the capital Yaoundé and Buea, one of the main cities in the Anglophone Southwest region, are protesting the government's crackdown on the Anglophone separatist movement. As Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, the inmates also have other grievances.
21-year-old university student Terence Meme says he has been searching for his father, Patrick Meme, since he heard that inmates of the Yaoundé Central Prison at Kondengi began rioting.
We have not heard from him and we have not seen him for the past 2 days. And we are very worried because he is a diabetic patient and he needs regular assistance and health care.
Terence says his father was arrested in the English-speaking northwestern town of Ndou in February 2017 and transferred to Yaoundé, where he has been in pre-trial detention as a suspected separatist fighter. Last Monday, detained suspected armed separatists from the English-speaking northwest and the southwest regions began protesting what they called marginalization by French-speaking inmates and prison staff. They denounced overcrowding, judicial delays, and what they described as deplorable conditions at the Yaoundé prison, which was constructed for 750 people, but now holds more than 6,000 inmates. Demonstrators included jailed supporters of Maurice Kamto, the head of the opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, or CRM. He is being held at the Yaoundé prison in connection with a protest that is distinct from the separatist campaign. The CRM had previously asked for dialogue to resolve tensions between the French and English-speaking regions. The Secretary General of the CRM, Christophe Ndong, also serves as Kamto's lawyer. Ndong says since the rioting began, the CRM has not been able to determine the whereabouts of several of their supporters, including CRM Vice President Mamadou Mota. Mota has been in prison for leading protests seeking Kamto's release. Ndong says several of the CRM supporters were seen being brutally taken away.
It is another aggravated situation where the government, after arresting all our leaders for a peaceful protest march, is really doing things with impunity. You even see the brutality the police were exercising. And in fact, it's doing this kind of criminal act with impunity. That's not the kind of government we think should rule us.
In a release, Communication Minister and Government Spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi refuted reports that some inmates were killed, but said many people were wounded and two were rushed to the hospital. Sadi said about 170 inmates who were identified as leaders of the rioting had been arrested. He did not specify where they were taken, but said some inmates had been moved to other facilities to make the Kondengi prison less crowded. Rights group Amnesty International has called on authorities in Cameroon to refrain from using excessive force against prisoners and independently and effectively investigate the use of firearms and live ammunition reported during the riot. A second riot was reported at the Boya Center prison on Tuesday. The government said the military intervened to restore order but provided no other details. The Cameroon National Commission for Human Rights and Freedoms reports an estimated 29,000 people are being held in the country's 80 prisons. Commission Chairperson Chemuta Divine Banda says most of the prisons are congested.
The conditions are unbearable, unlivable. Escaping would be a natural instinct.
Prisons should not be torture centers. We have said this clear and clear.
Scores of people from Cameroon's English-speaking regions have been arrested over the last 2 years during the conflict in which separatists have sought to form an independent state called Ambazonia. The United Nations estimates the conflict has left about 2,000 people dead and displaced more than 500,000 others since late 2017. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
From Yaoundé, we move to Malawi, where protesters have rejected a call by former President Bokuli Mulusi to suspend street riots and allow for talks to prevent further election-related clashes. Protesters have been calling for the Malawian Electoral Commission chairperson to resign over alleged fraud since President Peter Mutharika's re-election in May. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
Former Malawi President Tibagiri Mulusi urged protesters late Tuesday to halt months of demonstrations so he could mediate with the government authorities over May's contested presidential election. Mulusi, who was Malawi's president from 1994 to 2004, invited the main protesters group, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, to his home in Blantyre to discuss the issue.
"Please, I want to plead. Would you not give me at least, say, 7 days? So that I have time to travel to Lilongwe, meet these people about the issue that you are raising. But if you take a hard line, you know, I don't think it will help anybody."
But protesters rejected the offer and maintained their call for a twice-a-week street action to force Electoral Commission Chairperson Jenny Ansah to resign. Chairperson for the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Timothy Ntambo, led the talks with Mulusi.
"We respect our former head of state, but as we have spoken time without number, we do not believe in manipulative dialogue. We have strongly advised that demonstrations in itself are not a problem. It's a constitutional right. However, a problem at hand is that Jane Ansah is refusing to resign."
the protesters accuse Ansah of fraud in declaring Mutharika the winner of the May election with 39% of the vote. Runners-up Lazarus Chakwera and Saulo Chilima are challenging the election results in court, alleging ballot stuffing and the use of TVX collection fluid to change votes. The MEC maintains the election was free and fair. The Malawi's ongoing protests set the stage for further clashes with security. On Sunday, the headquarters of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party in Blantyre, which is seeking annulment of the elections, were burned to the ground. Muluzi told reporters he fears the violence is moving the country in a dangerous direction.
We must also accept that these demonstrations have caused a lot of economic hardship. You know that. The shops get closed, the banks are not open. There are so many things. I am again appealing to you. Could the demonstration on Thursday be postponed?
Political analyst Vincent Kondowe says with continued protests and no dialogue, Malawi will head toward anarchy. He says Mutharika, Chakwera and Chilima need to reach a compromise.
I think even if the courts today come in and say, well, the elections were conducted in a proper manner, the political disagreements will continue. So for me, the best way is for the leaders to agree to have a rerun. Because even Peter Mutharika himself agrees that the elections were messed up. He has been speaking this in different political rallies that he has conducted.
But Malawi authorities have dismissed rerunning the election. Meanwhile, protesters plan to hold demonstrations and vigils Thursday in all Malawi's major cities, which city authorities are heatedly rejecting. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Kang JJ singing in his native Nuer language. Listening to Kang JJ singing in Toknas. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.